Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, 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 hello. As always, I'm so glad to be on the air talking with my wonderful audience. This weekly event on PRN FM is such a substantial anchor point of my life, and I hope for some of you an anchor point for yours as well, for a place to come to hear good conversation, inspiring talk, informative conversations. You deserve the best information there is in this broad field of mental health, psychology, psychiatry, human well-being, and I try to do my best to bring it to you. Don't forget our daily news information that is on the website now. If you just go down breggin.com on the left, you're going to see the fresh daily news. My assistant, Ian, puts a lot of work into that, and I supervise it, and Ginger adds to it. And it just covers all kinds of things, from the risks of benzodiazepines, add to it increased pneumonia. That would come from probably the suppression of the cough reflexes and suppression of breathing while sleeping. I'm not sure what the mechanism might be, but it's somewhere in that area. Makes sense. On the other hand, there's an interesting study on mindfulness training conducted on your cell phone and how much that adds to not only contentment, but to greater socialization. So we have a broad arena of subjects that are covered every day. And they're really across the what might generally be called the positive psychology arena, the self-understanding arena, as well as the being thoroughly critical of prevailing biological medication-oriented approaches. Today is February 13th, 2019. So if you're listening now, it's live. It's live, which means you can call in. Remember that. We are now a call-in show. And the phone number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. So you can call in there, and you might be listening on the archives. You can get to the archives by going to breggin.com, and there you can alphabetically look up anybody who's been on the show, and just get an overview of the several hundred fascinating shows now over the years that I've had with leaders in them, in the psychiatric reform and in the mental health fields. And also remember the email dedicated to you, BregginLive@hotmail.com. BregginLive. I do appreciate the comments that come in. I wish I could give detailed answers to medical questions, but I can't. Wish I could. But I can't, and for many different ethical, medical, insurance reasons. But I'm glad to hear your stories. I want to know who's listening and what you care about and what you struggle with. And so many of you have been injured by psychiatry and have relatives and loved ones who have been injured by psychiatry. So you can call in live, 888-874-4888. And since we've talked last, sad news in that Michelle Carter, who really is a lovely young woman, the woman accused of texting her boyfriend to death and then convicted of murder for allegedly telling him to get back in his fume-filled truck and die. It's such a involuted, twisted story. And I've written a whole series about it on Madden America and on my, that you can get to through my website or on Madden America as well. And I'm going to write another blog on it. So be on the alert for kind of a summary of this colossal victimization of a girl who was 17 and on psychiatric drugs, whose boyfriend was older than her and who was on psychiatric drugs. And just the bizarreness of blaming this youngster for his death when there was so much going on. And indeed, he was by far the older, stronger, more powerful of the individuals. And she, by far away, the more innocent. So I'll be writing another blog about that. And remember my frequent alerts. Sign up for them. Get them free. And you'll get the announcement on the frequent alerts. So if there's one thing I would hope all of you would do, it would be go to Breggin.com, 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 and sign up for my frequent alerts, because that's where I'm just going to always be most directly communicating with you. My guest today is Andrew Thibault. Andrew, are you there? Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. It's maybe a little delay. There was a bit of a delay there, but then you came through loud and clear. Andrew has been on the show before. He will tell you an interesting coincidence about his appearances on this show. Andrew is a director and an actor and has a wonderful film out, came out last year, called Speed Demons. It's really among the very best of the films, really, really among the best of the films that deals with how psychiatric drugs, in this case, stimulants, you know, taken for ADHD that made this poor man utterly psychotic that Andrew was talking about, a very good man, in this case, a grown man, a young man, a lawyer, a successful man, who becomes a shooter, and Andrew does his story so well, and it's got more focus on this man's humanity, on who he really is, on the details of what happens to him. It's just done in a really good way. Speed Demons, and Andrew can tell you more about that, and about his own life, and lots of things. He does great independent research, uses FDA materials. He can tell you something about that. We've talked about that in the past. His last name, Andrew's last name, is spelled T-H-I-B-A-U-L-T. And welcome back, Andrew, to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Thank you, Dr. Breggin. It's such an honor to be on your show again. And I just have to thank you publicly for all the work that you're doing to raise awareness about the risks of psychotropic medications. It really is amazing work that you do. And I'm excited that this is a live program now and you have callers. That would be great if anyone wants to call
in. It was live before, but questions. Now we have callers as well. So it'd be interesting. People, Andrew's an interesting person to talk with at, but I want to unleash him more on you to tell you, tell the folks a little bit more about yourself. They, even if they heard the show a year ago, they may not remember much about you. So introduce yourself over again. I didn't give much detail.
So I'm a documentary filmmaker, as you pointed out. I did a film last year that came out called Speed Demons, Killing for Attention. It's currently available on Amazon Prime and Google Play, iTunes, Comcast, Xfinity, Cox Network, Dish Network, that sort of thing. So people can go out there and watch that. And that was a, I would say, an in-depth analysis of the link between stimulant medications prescribed for ADHD and school violence. And, you know, something that, that was really kind of a somber and a sad anniversary, it was a year ago tomorrow, Dr. Bregan, that we were on the air talking about this link between stimulants and school violence. And unbeknownst to either of us, there was a horrific tragedy that was unfolding that very afternoon in Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, which, of course, we now know that, 17 people lost their lives. Very, very, very tragic situation. Come to find out through reporting from one of the local newspapers, the Sun Sentinel, recently, that the alleged perpetrator in that case, Nicholas Cruz, was reported to have been taking an ADHD stimulant called Focalin,
which is methylphenidate.
So, right, dexmethylphenidate, like Ritalin, exactly. You know, but we really don't hear about this in the national media. Oftentimes it's the, you know, an upstart local reporter making a name for themselves that reports on this link, and it just gets buried in the national media. You know, another similar type case would have been the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and there was a Johnny-on-the-spot reporter there that reported that Stephen Paddock was on diazepam, right? But when we read the national news media, you think that there was no link whatsoever. In fact, the way that it's that they spin it, you think that psychotrope medications actually reduce violence.
Yeah. Now, remind folks, remember that we have people who, unlike us, don't spend a lot of time thinking about mass murderers. And Stephen Paddock was the man who committed one of the greatest mass murders in history out the hotel window in Las Vegas, right? And he was actually taken Valium at the time of the shooting, and this reporter just dug and dug and got freedom of information and came out with that. I did a blog on it, Andrew, and it just never, nobody ever got interested in it. And benzos definitely can disinhibit. And he had a significant therapeutic, quote, level of the medication in his system at the time.
Yeah, that was really good reporting on behalf of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. But again, we just don't see it in the national media. And I think that's because, you know, if you look at data from Kantar, which measures how much the pharmaceutical industry is spending on direct-to-consumer advertising annually here in the United States, which, of course, is illegal in every other country except the United States and New Zealand. Pharma spent $6.4 billion in direct-to-consumer advertising in 2016. And, you know, it would appear that there are 6.4 billion reasons that the national media doesn't want to report on the link. But we can find that information a lot of times in the local media. And so it was really interesting to see sort of the juxtaposition or the contrast between what the national media was saying and what we're seeing coming out at the local reporting. So case in point, you may remember another horrible tragedy that came out of Texas, the Santa Fe High School shooting. And I think it was Oliver North, the incoming president for the National Rifle Association, did some Sunday talk shows and blamed the mass shootings on Ritalin. Of course, the issue is much more complex than just psychotrope medications, but as you and I both are aware, they're always in the mix, almost always in the mix. That said, it was interesting because you have some kind of self-ordained fact finders like PolitiFact that came out, and their actual headline to debunk his statement was, "No links between Ritalin and school shooting, as NRA's Oliver North claimed, end quote. Well, that actually is not a true statement. For one, we know from the FDA lawsuit that I filed, the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, of a couple of school shooters that were prescribed Ritalin. Kip Pinkel comes to mind from Oregon, and TJ Solomon from Georgia. Both were prescribed Ritalin. So it's just not a true statement. However, the so-called fact checkers in that case ruled that Mr. North's statement was false. I think what's even more deeply troubling is then there seem to be these dial-a-quotes that the journalists get from folks like Dr. Russell Barkley, Dr. Peter Langman, Dr. George DePaul, and the like, that seem to suggest not only do the drugs not only are the drugs not linked with violence or aggression, but that somehow they actually reduce aggression. Have you seen articles like that, Dr. Bragg?
I haven't seen the specific claim that the drugs reduce aggression. Of course, no drugs are approved for that purpose, but they're always claiming that, quote, treatment, meaning the drugs, is what's needed for these people who commit violence, instead of recognizing that how many of them have been through the psychiatric system, almost all of them, and how many of them are on psychiatric drugs, which is many or almost all of them. And by the way, you know, I mean, the interesting thing is they're not on alcohol. They're not on marijuana. So there are other psychoactive substances out there. And they're not associated with these events. And I think one reason is that it takes a certain drivenness, certain agitation to go ahead and get into this kind of a state where you're grandiose and you're pumped up and you're rageful and you feel entitled to have revenge, and whatever other mental state these folks get driven into is much more related to drugs that stimulate, such as the stimulants, and in particular the newer antidepressants, the SSRIs, as well as Effexor and Wellbutrin and others that affect serotonin and that also stimulate the brain and drive the brain into an energized state at times. I mean, it's clear that it's a particular kind of drug that's implicated, because we couldn't go through this and say, yeah, a lot of them were alcoholics or a lot of them are smoking dope. No, it's the lot of them is associated with the psychiatric drugs and with the three classes of drugs that are known to disinhibit and drive people to do violent and terrible things, which include the benzos and the stimulants and the antidepressants. But continue, Andrew. And you've done so much research in this yourself, and God, you've looked at the FDA in every possible way. So I'd like to just hear more from you about this.
Sure. You know, I think it's interesting the sort of positioning the drugs is somehow reducing aggression. Of course, there's an FDA warning on the stimulant medications for ADHD that warns of right on the label of hostility, increased, new or worsening hostility, aggression, and in some cases, drugs like Vyvanse, even homicidal ideation. Or the two that you mentioned, Effexor and Wellbutrin, also have a homicidal ideation warning on the label of the drug. So this isn't something far-fetched. This is based on sound science. Let me read to you a quote that Russell Barkley gave to PolitiFact for this article that falsely claimed there were no links between Ritalin and school shootings. So Barkley states, quote, "We have no research in our scientific literature of more than 50,000 articles showing that Ritalin increases aggression on average." Now, that's a word salad, okay? And you think any curious journalist would start to probe in and ask questions. I can't remember the last time I've seen such wordsmithing. He goes on to say, quote, "Research, in fact, shows that stimulants like Ritalin reduce aggressive behavior in those with ADHD. And to someone who's uninitiated, these sound like very authoritative statements. Wow, 50,000 articles, scientific literature. Well, I can guarantee you this, Dr. Bregan, there aren't 50,000 scientific articles. They may be articles, but as you know, a lot of the studies that are done are actually paid for by Big Pharma and involve trial enriched the design, enriched trial design, which essentially skews the results in favor of the pharmaceutical industry. And they often don't publish studies that don't support the efficacy or the safety of the drug.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. The most important study done of violence and drugs, I believe, is the study by Thomas Moore and Joe Glenn Mullen, and also a statistician, Kurt Furberg. But Tom Moore, I've had on the radio show, I've known him for years, an excellent researcher. Joe Glenn Mullen is a psychiatrist who has written some books on antidepressants and their harms, and does a lot of legal work on behalf of the federal government when these suits come up against the drug companies. So we've got this study. It's open access, PLOS-1. And you can also find it on my website. That is a resource center for antidepressants. It's just www.123antidepressants.com. And you can get to it from my website, too. But right directly, you can go 123antidepressants.com and search Moore, M-O-O-R-E. On page 3 is table 1, drugs associated with violence, adverse drug events, violent adverse drug events. And the class of drugs, the type of drug that's number 3 after Prozac, the first drug, incidentally, is varenicline, which is Chantix, the smoking drug. It's highly associated with causing violence in reports to the FDA, factoring in the numbers of prescriptions. Those are factored in before coming up with the final data. And that to me indicates, that this is not about people being, quote, mentally ill. The second drug is Prozac that has the highest ratio of reports. The third is Paxil, and then the fourth is amphetamines. Now, amphetamines are very, very closely related to methylphenidate. They are ADHD drugs. So here we have the ADHD drug group. Amphetamines are number 4. And then down a ways, but still in the top group, is methylphenidate. So, in fact, we have all the two basic ADHD drug groups. Really, they're the same group, methylphenidate and amphetamine. All psychopharmacology textbooks, pretty much all pharmacology textbooks will put together as one group, amphetamines and methylphenidate, because they are so, so similar. So here's an article that, a great research project which clearly places the amphetamines and the amphetamine-like drugs that are used to treat ADHD as being associated with reports of violence to the FDA. And they mean serious violence. They're not talking about reports of aggression. They got to be, physical harm, violence, that kind of thing, murder and so on. So,
well, that's...
Gosh, a person like Barkley just gets up and talks, and he talks.
Well,
he's a big pusher, by the way, of psych drug, big pusher of ADHD and stimulants. And he's not a physician; he's a psychologist. Goes around the world pushing these drugs. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, which is important to note, Dr. Bregan, because in most states, he would not be able to prescribe medication.
And he wouldn't be able to testify in court about the drugs either in most places.
Yeah, that's really remarkable that you point out that study, that Moore et al. Study, And it certainly it showed that there was a disproportionately high number percentage of reports of violence associated with those types of medications, the antidepressants, the stimulants. And yet here we have Barclay saying that research actually shows the opposite. So you have to wonder, do you believe what the FDA puts on the label, which is that it increases instances of new or worsening aggression and hostility? Or do you believe the, the shills that are paid by Big Pharma? But I think when you drill down into this wordsmithing, this word salad, is where you really find the key. You know, Barclay says that none of these 50,000 articles, which he characterizes as scientific, which I think in and of itself is questionable, show that Ritalin increases aggression on average. Now, Dr. Bregan, I don't think anybody's saying that the drugs increase aggression on average. I don't think anybody would think that Nicholas Cruz was an average person. No one's talking about the average. We're talking about the 2 to 5%. You know, when you look at the FDA epidemiologist, Dr. Andrew Mossholder, Dr. Kate Gelperin, that did the study, they found that 2 to 5% of children taking stimulants will become psychotic, manic, and or have hallucinations. So no one's claiming that
that's huge.
Increases.
By the way, that's like if you have a room and there's 100 kids in it, and you put them on, you're going to find several of those children are made quite disturbed and crazy by the drugs. And a lot of the data is much, much worse than that. If there were studies done of Prozac and then, initially of Prozac and young people, 18 and younger, and up to a third, and in some cases a half, studies done at Harvard and Yale, and then later one out of Biederman's own group. Biederman's the guy who was, you know, pushing all these drugs on kids and getting money under the table from Johnson & Johnson. They show these large percentages of children getting irritable or angry or becoming asocial or developing manic-like symptoms. Very big chunks of the kids. I mean, these drugs should have been pulled off the market, especially for 18 and younger, within a year or two, because a lot of these studies start in 1990, drug comes out in 1989, 1990, 91, 92. And again, you can find all this categorized so that for easy access and downloading on my Antidepressant Resource Center, which is, again, 123antidepressants.com. Andrew, give you the mic back.
It's a good point in terms of the prevalence or the incidence rate. And so if there are 6 million people taking stimulants in the U.S., 2 to 5%, that's 300,000 people who are going to have a psychotic, manic, or hallucinatory episode every year on that medication. That's a lot of people. But I think, you know, the truth, when you drill down into Barclay's statement, you can read into it. He's saying that there – the articles don't show that Ritalin increases aggression on average, but I think what you can read into that is that they do. The body of evidence does show that a certain percentage of people will become aggressive and violent on the drugs, and that's why he has to qualify it with a statement on average. And similarly, if you look at his other statement, research in fact shows that stimulants like Ritalin reduce aggressive behavior in those with ADHD. That's another qualification, because Dr. Bregan, you and I both know that ADHD itself is wildly overdiagnosed in this country. You know, you have 10-year, there was a study done in Louisiana that was cited in Speed Demons, whereby they found according to Medicaid records, that 35.8% of 10-year-old white boys in that state were diagnosed and medicated for ADHD. Now, that's just a staggering number, more than one in three. So to say that Ritalin reduces aggressive behavior in those with ADHD, well, what about people that don't have ADHD? What about people like you know, we talked about, you mentioned the 31-year-old attorney who was the FSU shooter, who was previously an honors graduate of FSU, was a respected attorney, former prosecutor, who took Vyvanse and became psychotic and started shooting up Strozier Library. So I think you could also read into his statement that there's a significant risk for people who are taking the drug that don't have ADHD. So you really have to look at the qualifiers, and I think they tell as much of the story as anything else.
Yeah. I just pulled up the full prescribing information for Focalin, which is methylphenidate, Ritalin, uh-huh, as well. And as I recalled, right there at the top under contraindications is agitation. That it's contraindicated. You're not supposed to give this drug to anybody who's agitated. And agitation is a very important aspect of aggressivity and violence. And the reason you're not supposed to give it, period, that's what a contraindication is, the FDA saying don't do it, is that it can increase and worsen agitation. But to add to the bizarreness of it all, what is ADHD? I mean, it's really, most of the time, it's a kid who's kind of agitated and can't sit still. He's anxious. He's tense. He's agitated. Well, it's contraindicated in kids who are agitated, have marked anxiety and tension. So the whole system is just crazy. It is loaded with craziness. We are commonly giving these drugs to kids for whom it is literally contraindicated and for whom it could spin their tension, their anxiety, and especially their agitation over into aggressivity. It's such a bizarre world. You know, it's like all smoke and mirrors. It's just terrible. Just terrible.
It really is. It really is. And we're not getting the full picture from the national media because they have 6.4 billion reasons per year not to tell us what's going on. So yeah. Let me
continue on this. I don't usually do this on the radio show, in part because, Andrew, I'm always afraid that I will knock myself off the air by going online. If I knock myself off the air, you're capable of handling the rest of the show. And my engineers, Jesse Alice, let him handle the rest of the show if I knock myself offline, because it's so interesting and hard to believe. I'm looking still at Focalin, but it's it's the same thing for the Ritalin and for the amphetamine. And this is the highlights. These are the highlights at the top of the full prescribing information. And they've got a special warning about the emergence of new psychotic or manic symptoms. Better stop the treatment right away. Well, psychosis and mania are associated with violence, especially mania. I mean, people who are manic are very irritable, very angry, and they do get violent on occasion. And then the next thing is a bullet aggression. Monitor for appearance or worsening of aggressive behavior or hostility. So, folks, what Andrew is talking about being in the label is right there in the label. And you can go online, folks. And you can just Google full prescribing information, and then it'll come up from the website of the drug companies. But go to the FDA one, because the FDA one is a little easier to get to. They try to keep you away from it on their websites, the drug companies, from the full prescribing information. So go to the FDA. And then usually if you just do a control F, you will be able, or you'll get a little window, and you'll be able to put in aggression. I suggest when you're searching aggression, there could be aggressivity, it could be something else. So go aggress, A-G-G-R-E-S, you know, and then just do a search. And here you come up with that warning, and then you'll get down to the fact that quote, while there's no systematic evidence that stimulants cause aggressive behavior, patients should be monitored for worsening. So they, you know, you get the waffling around there in the FDA materials as well.
Yeah, but the two the two key words there are new and worsening.
Yes. Right?
So new means this can occur in patients with no known risk factors, patients that don't have a history of aggression or hostility or agitation. That's key. And then the worsening is, well, if they already are, like you pointed out, is a contraindication. If they're agitated, don't give them the stimulant. So there it is, right on the label, and yet you have these pharmaceutical industry shills that are quoted routinely in these national press articles that really read like an apology for stimulant medication or for antidepressants or whichever particular medication that they're defending that day, that claims that these drugs reduce aggressive behavior, whereas it's right there on the label. Let me give you another example here. At the same time, in response to Oliver North's comments, CNN had an article. And they referred specifically to Nicholas Cruz. And this is what they said. They said, quote, his psychiatric records obtained by CNN show that in 2016, he was on two types of medication commonly prescribed for ADHD, but neither was Ritalin, end quote. So we can all breathe a tremendous sigh of relief here, Dr. Bregan, that he wasn't on Ritalin, right? But CNN points out that they had obtained his psychiatric records. So they knew what we now know that the Sun Sentinel has reported, that one of the drugs was Focalin. So them claiming that neither was Ritalin is kind of like hair splitting between Coke and Pepsi. They're both cola, right?
Yes. Yes, this is interesting. I'm having a good time relaxing here, folks, and just risking, you know, doodling around, which I just don't do, but it's kind of very useful. What I'm going to read you now is mind-blowing. This is off the full prescribing information, which I obtained off the FDA website, just Googling it. And this is under central nervous system for adverse effects of Adderall. In particular, this is Adderall XR, which is what's mostly used. So Adderall XR label. And I did that little aggression thing. I did AGGRESS. And we get the central nervous system. This is a list of adverse effects under central nervous system. I'll read you the whole thing because it isn't very long. I'll read you all but the last few things, which are kind of weird words. Psychotic episodes at recommended doses. That's the number one. And by the way, number one means most frequent in this group. So under central nervous system adverse effects, most frequent in this group, psychotic episodes at recommended doses, overstimulation, restlessness, irritability, euphoria. That's the list so far. All of that leads to violence. Then dyskinesias, which are abnormal movements. Some of them, like akathisia, can lead to violence. Dysphoria, which is painful emotions. Depression, then they talk about tremors and tics, and then they go to aggression and anger. This is all listed for probably the most commonly used drug right now for ADHD, which is Adderall XR. And by the way, folks, all of this appeared in studies that were only 3 weeks long. 3 weeks long. That's what they got away with. The main studies for approving Adderall XR were 3 weeks long. In other words, they were meaningless in terms of whether they're helpful, because at 3 weeks, all you've been doing is suppressing the person, turning them their brain down and making them apathetic. People get apathetic on these drugs. Monkeys get apathetic on these drugs. But as the brain fights back, you're going to get all this craziness. And here you've gotten that even in these short-term studies, you're getting psychotic episodes at recommended doses. You're getting overstimulation, restlessness, irritability, depression, dysphoria, aggression, anger. what is this world we're in that we're giving this to our children after testing it for 3 weeks? It's certainly not the world of doing good. It's the world of dominating markets, making markets out of children, marketing drugs to them, marketing violent TV, marketing junk food. We've turned our kids into a marketplace. It's a terrible situation. Andrew, fill in.
My jaw is on the ground that the national media can spin a narrative and not take into account what's right there on the label. And those are obviously listed in order of frequency. And so those are just staggering side effects that are associated with the drug. And, you know, one of the things that I really keyed in there was recommended doses.
Very important. Thank you.
So when we talk about new or worsening, then we know, yes, it's the drug. If it's new, it's the drug. And then it recommended doses. So, you know, the next thing that the pharmaceutical industry will say is that, well, you know, it's because you weren't taking it as directed. In fact, if you compare the DSM-4 with the DSM-5, the DSM-4 reflected the large body of scientific evidence that, as you pointed out in Speed Demons in your interview, that stimulant-induced psychosis is a well-known clinical phenomenon. And so there was a disorder called stimulant-induced psychotic disorder. And I've searched high and low. That doesn't exist in the DSM-5. Why? Because you can't have a disorder that's a mental illness that's created by a medication. That just wouldn't be good for business. So now what you have is stimulant use disorder, and the obvious inference is that it's stimulant abuse disorder. But now here we see the truth in the Adderall label, but no, this is at recommended doses. And oh yeah, by the way, at the top of the label, in a big black box, which is the most stern warning that you can get, there's a warning of high potential for a dependency and abuse.
Oh yes, serious. I haven't even talked about the abuse potential. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and the fact that you build up their tolerance and you need a higher dose of the drug. So it's
and of course we should throw in the one thing that has been proven time and again is that they stunt growth. They stunt growth, and they do it not by just appetite suppression, which a lot of misled pediatricians think, so then you eat more. No, it's by disruption of growth hormone. So if you're actually stunting height from growth hormone disorders caused by these drugs universally, what in the world is happening to all the organs, including your brain?
Well, I think that the last one you mentioned is probably the most important. You know, what kind of stunting of the brain development takes place with these drugs? So it's just, it's really interesting to see how much the national media has become essentially an agent for the pharmaceutical industry. So there's another case that comes to mind here. Back in 2006, there was an article that was in the New York Times. It was entitled, "A Psychiatrist is Slain, A Sad Debate Deepens." Now, the psychiatrist that the New York Times was referring to was Wayne S. Fenton. He was a renowned schizophrenia expert who worked at the National Institutes of Mental Health. And he was beaten to death by his 19-year-old patient, Vitaly Davidov. Now, the debate that Benedict Carey, the author of that piece, is referring to is whether the rights of individuals are outweighed by the rights of the public. In other words, should we forcibly medicate patients for the public safety? And I think for that article to have any relevance, there are two things need to be true. One is that this individual, Davidov, needed to be off his meds, right? And we often hear that when violence occurs and then it does come to light that they had some psychiatric history. Then the pharmaceutical industry pundits will say, well, he must have been off his meds. And the second thing is, you know, there is this sort of underlying suggestion that there is a treatment and oftentimes treatment in this country is synonymous with a pill, that will somehow prevent violence. Now, what's interesting to note is that through the FDA lawsuit, I obtained the adverse event report that corresponds to this case. And it says, quote, an Otsuka employee, Otsuka is the manufacturer of the drug, Abilify, reported that a 19-year-old male patient became agitated and committed murder, here's the important part, while on aripiprazole, end quote. So the whole premise of this national debate is, in this case, apparently erroneous, if we're to believe the manufacturer themselves, number one. And then number two, the drug that's being held out, the second-generation antipsychotics, as some type of a violence prevention treatment, really is disingenuous, because later on, 13 years after the FDA approved aripiprazole, known under the brand name Abilify, they issued another warning of uncontrollable, harmful urges or impulses. So, number one, there's no evidence that these drugs prevent violence. Number two, the FDA has even warned that they can increase these uncontrollable, harmful impulses. And number three, we now have evidence that this individual that was used to sort of tee up this national debate on whether we should forcibly medicate people, turns out, according to the manufacturer of the drug, was on the drug at the time. But it gets worse. This individual, Vitaly Davidov, was found not guilty by reason of insanity. And he was committed to Clifton T. Perkins State Mental Hospital in Maryland, where he then went on to kill his roommate while on medication. So the idea that medication is somehow going to save us from violence, I think, is a misnomer.
Save us from violence, send him to a big psychiatric facility for the criminally insane, Perkins, which I've been in and looked at and seen people in there. Actually, when I went to Perkins, you know, they talked about how they'd rather be in the state mental hospital itself than in the insane facility at Perkins, because it was so horrendous. Let me say a word about Abilify, and I think you have more to say about this, Andrew. Let me come back to you. But I want to say another word about Abilify, and then I want to go to a patient caller. He's not a patient. He just has patients. A patient caller. Abilify, and you can get this from the full prescribing information, again, is notorious for causing akathisia among all of the new drugs. Abilify, which is among the most popular, is the potentially most disastrous because it causes akathisia. Akathisia is a horrible feeling of inner irritability, tension, pain, suffering that people find indescribable. When they try to describe akathisia, doctors think they're crazy. They say things like, I had hot lead coming in my veins. It felt like I was having my skin peeled off. It felt like I was under the control of some internal demon making me crazy. It's just an awful, awful experience. And there's a lot of guys who've written about this. Van Putten has written great articles. You can find all of this on my Resource Center for Antipsychotic Drugs. These are all free, by the way, 123antipsychotics.com, 123antipsychotics.com. And even a little amount of akathisia can be a nightmare. And in the DSM-4-TR, it talked about how akathisia caused by either the antidepressants, which can cause it, or the neuroleptics, the antipsychotic drugs, which more commonly cause it, can lead to aggression and psychosis. I don't remember whether they said violence or aggression and psychosis. And that's been taken out of the DSM-5. The DSM-5, guys, it's like before they published the final version, they looked at everything Peter Breggin used from the DSM-4-TR, the one right before it, And they took it up, including my use. I used the akathisia sections. I used the tardive dyskinesia sections and some other sections, and they all got taken out of the DSM-5. Oh, God. You can't exaggerate the extremes these go to, these guys. Let me go to the patient guest, Tom from Connecticut. Are you still hanging in there, Tom?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I have a dear friend who respects you quite a bit. He's 84. He's still a practicing psychologist. He moans and groans about these tragedies all the time. Do you think Hippocrates, looking at this, would need some of these drugs at this point?
Well, you know, go back and listen to some of my earlier radio shows, and you'll see where I have a wonderful guest who talks about Hippocrates and ancient classics. And Hippocrates was ridiculed in some of the oldest classics for wanting to give drugs to mentally disturbed people. So since Hippocrates was a physician, we can't trust him either. He's one of these early physicians who wanted to take over the spiritual realm and make it into a medical realm. Tom, tell us what else you called about.
Well, the reason is I have two very dear niece and nephew. One is 17, one is 20. The niece, they've been on combinations of these drugs for I can't even remember how long, and their mother doesn't really openly talk about it, although I know they've been on Ritalins, Adderalls, mix and match. My niece started cutting herself probably at about 14. She's 21-ish now. That's kind of declined a bit, but she's struggled, but is doing well in school and has a job. But my nephew, who's just 17, began cutting, and he's had two suicide attempts in the last month. But they, you know, the correlation of these things, and given the types of, you know, side effects that you've discussed now through the series of the show here, the correlation to child suicide or attempts has to be quite large too, regardless of outward violence to others, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they all carry a black box warning, the antidepressants, and a number of other drugs too have somewhat similar black box warnings, but they carry black box warning for 24 and younger, increased rate of suicidality, suicidal behavior. Yeah. And that's just from these very corrupt, outrageously distorted drug company short-term trials that this data came out of. So imagine if the drug companies were honest.
I had no clue that the trials were that short. That's staggeringly criminal. I had no idea that they were that short. That's ridiculous. Anyway.
Oh, the trials for Prozac were 4 to 6 weeks, and most patients, so many patients weren't finishing them that they had to allow fancy footwork of imagining patients finishing in order to use the studies at all. I mean, it's just all bizarre what goes on.
Is it my sister-in-law is at kind of her wit's end trying to help her children. Is there any kind of basis?
What helps kids the most in the world in terms of therapy or therapeutic approaches is family therapy. It's getting together with first whoever's in the household who are adults, going to somebody to try to get both and talk about the child, and then start to work as a family to improve the quality of loving communication in the family. It doesn't matter if your child is maybe disciplined too, because a lot of well-meaning parents nowadays don't know how to provide just a certain amount of moral authority in the family. You don't have to hit kids or yell at kids. You just got to know that you're in charge and work from there. I described that in talking back to Ritland. I showed the importance of the moral authority. But
The sad part about this equation, which you just brought up, it's a divorce situation, and mom wanting to be the kid's best friend is opposed to giving any kind of stern guidance in areas that are needed. And I've seen that happen since, it's like a Rubik's Cube of dysfunction, and trying to get even just one color on one side of the square, it'd be amazing to get them all on the same page at all.
Yeah, well, that's what we run into when we're trying to help kids. The kids that need the most help are usually kids who are coming from some sort of ruptured or difficult family. They're the hardest families to help. So it's just an irony that but it makes sense that the hardest kids to help are the ones who are in the most trouble. And there's just no way around that difficult situation. By the way, folks, I wanted to give you about Hippocrates. My guest, go back and check in my on Bregan.com. Check the radio link and look in the archives for Michael Fontaine, Fontaine. Michael's a really good man and a student of the classics, a professor of classical literature. And look up his visits to my show. There are several of them. And he just goes back and he has a wonderful time looking at older literature and the distrust that thoughtful people had of the psychiatric approach from its earliest inception, literally going all the way back to Hippocrates. It's really interesting. I just realized I haven't invited Andrew in on the call. You're not a clinician, Andrew, but do you have any thoughts on all this?
Well, I just thank Tom for sharing that story. I feel for his niece and nephew. And I would just comment that the divorce is a fertile ground for pharmaceutical industry predatory marketing. That oftentimes the trauma associated with divorce is confused for ADHD, for depression, anxiety, etc. And that's when the PCPs and the psychiatrists whip out the prescribing pad and start writing, prescriptions for these medications.
Andrew, we've got a minute left. First, I want to remind folks, Andrew Thibault, Thibault, he's a director, he's an actor, and he's an independent researcher of enormous dedication, who's constantly giving me new stuff out of the files of the FDA. He's done this all on his own, and he's got a wonderful movie, Speed Demons. Go get it. And Michael, again, just to tell folks where they get Speed Demons and we'll go out with the music.
You can watch it on Amazon Prime, on Google Play, and on iTunes. And thanks again, Dr. Bregan. Appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Well, you'll continue to be a regular as you do increasingly interesting and important work. Researching these issues, and I hope making new films. You're going to make a new, just give us a hint. You're going to make a new film on these issues of drugs and psychiatry and violence?
Yes, I'm working on two right now. One that has to do with the mass shootings and another one has to do with youth treatment centers.
Well, that's great work. I'm so glad you're active in this field, and you're another example of how much good one person can do. And my wonderful audience, thank you for you and your attention. And I will be talking to you next week as usual. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.